let's talk about Twitter for a little bit. This week, two things kind of back to back day to day that happened. The beginning of the week, Tapbot released Tweetbot 3 for Mac, which is a brand new version, has dark mode, has better notification activity viewing, new sidebar, and a nice new update. And then the very next day, Twitter announces that delayed change to the developer API that made it kind of a ruckus a few weeks ago is going into effect in 3 months, on August the 16th. And they gave out pricing for what developers will need to pay for access to that API. There's a few tiers, with monthly prices with a set user base, like, 0 to 250 goes from, you know, a few $100, I think, to like $2,900. And then there's an enterprise tier that like any actual app like Tweetbot or Twitter, if it would need to use, and they don't give pricing for that one. But, if you just do some math, you have to imagine it's way too expensive to be practical, and it doesn't actually give like every feature that you get from the old API. So, it's been a kind of a bad week for like fans of Twitter that we are. And what do you think about all this?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point. Like, even if you did pay, you're still going to be worse off. Like, yeah. The API does not have a streaming timeline, whether you pay or whether you don't pay. So the main difference between being on the new account activity API is that you can carry on getting like real time notifications for things like likes and engagement and direct messages and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not part of that, which I'm pretty sure all the Twitter clients in existence today will not be part of this program because of it's just price prohibitive, that all that stuff is now going to be delayed by a few minutes. Or, you know, because they're going to basically have to manually poll like once a minute to refresh that information, whereas before it would stream down them to them in real time.
Yeah, they have an idea of who this new API is for, and it's definitely not like third party Twitter apps. It's like chat. They name some things like that are good for brands like chatbots and other marketing services. But it's not meant to be like an alternative to the Twitter experience on the web or their official apps. It's meant to be like, you know, other ways of building on top of Twitter. Tapbots has said that they don't think that the API change is going to like break their app in any meaningful way. This was the day before the change was like really detailed. They said nothing's changing on June 19th because the API has been delayed indefinitely. Well, the next day it got a change date, so it's not that far off. And then they say if and when Twitter deprecates the current streaming APIs, the app will still function fine. Only a few features will be slower or removed. And then they say that there's a replacement API. This is all optimistic. They say the worst case scenario is that Tweetbot won't be able to show alerts for likes and retweets, and that alerts for tweets, mentions, quotes, DMs, and follows will be delayed by a minute or two. Now, none of that sounds great, but like, I don't think Tapbot has really done a good job of like post launch responding to the specifics of what Twitter announced, because it sounds like what Twitter announced is a little bit worse. And I'm a little bit confused by all of this, like until it actually goes into effect. I'm not quite sure what happens exactly, because it sounds like when they say streaming, there's a feature within Twitter that is like new tweets appear as they come in. Like a lot of the apps call it like pinned to top. And it's basically like you let your Twitter app go, and as new tweets are, you know, like people you follow, they have a new tweet, it appears in your timeline. You don't touch the app, you don't have to pull to refresh or anything, and it just appears. And like that's how I use Twitter. It's like passively kind of glancing at it and like watching for breaking news and like seeing what people are discussing with each other, jumping in whenever I've got input. And it sounds like there's not a replacement for that, but I'm not even positive. I mean, is that your take too?
Yeah, what they're saying is you're going to have to move to a REST API, which is where the client has to manually fetch at an interval. So the streaming API that exists today, like Twitter sends new events as they come in, like second by second.
Yeah.
If you're polling, which is what a REST API relies on, you're going to have to be like a minimum of like 20 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute. And this is what like Tweetbot on iPhone does if you're on mobile data.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's expensive to keep a streaming connection live. So they have like a, they basically just refresh once a minute or whatever. Like yeah. The mobile client isn't my worry. For me, it's the Mac app, right? Like
yeah.
My Twitter app stays not necessarily in an actual sidebar, but it's essentially a sidebar of everything I'm doing. Like I put it in the skinny column on the left-hand side of the screen, and I'm constantly glancing at it. It's like a news ticker, right? And it's not just news. It's, you know, people joking around or playing on this, and then you have some publication stuff mixed in there. So obviously what you want to follow. But I have that like open all day long when I'm on my computer.
Yeah,
me too. I watch it like constantly. And the difference to me between seeing all my tweets come in as they happen versus, oh, it's probably going to come in like refresh once every 30 seconds is that's a, like a ginormous difference.
Well,
in the olden days, there wasn't a streaming API and Twitter did work with pull to refresh and, you know, just waiting in it an update. But we've been on the new middle for so long now. I'm going to struggle to give that up.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even care that much if Twitter had kept their Mac app alive and not buggy, because the Twitter for Mac app, whilst it was working, did support streaming, right?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't as smooth, but it did.
One of the few official Twitter clients that did support streaming, because the iOS apps and stuff don't, and the website doesn't at the moment. So, but if Twitter for Mac still existed, it had streaming, it would suck for, you know, Twitterific and Tweetbot that they're getting barred off of even more Twitter features. They still haven't resolved the problem with like polls and everything. Like Twitter, despite wanting to charge, I think it works out to $12 per user per month, they're still cordoning off even more features from people. Like, if Twitter for Mac was around, I'd be happy on that. I mean, I use Twitter for Mac full time until they killed it.
Like, yeah, it's the last day.
I mean, I bought Tweetbot 2 for $20 like a month and a half ago, despite even knowing that Tweetbot 3 was coming out because we were on the beta. So yeah. I was probably one of the last people to buy Tweetbot 2 like it for Mac, and now it's like, oh dear, here we go. And it's not just that these limitations are coming in August. I think the writing's on the wall, right? We're going to head down a path of them just pulling even more and more stuff out. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen loads of comments like, how does Twitter expect third-party clients to pay $12 per user per month for this service?
They don't.
They don't, exactly. This API is not designed for third-party clients. Simple as that. It's designed for companies like Starbucks, who manage 500 Twitter accounts across all regions, and they can do real-time replies and support, chatbots, all of that type of stuff. Like, it is not designed for a company to release an alternative client to Twitter.com and let customers subscribe to it. Because if you were going to... Because for a start, there's no guarantee that... Because the plans go up to 250 people, I think, maximum.
Plus enterprise, which is unknown price. You have the contact Twitter app.
Yeah, if you take the premium price, it works out to about $12 per user. But let's just imagine for a second that Twitter would let you... would let Tweetbot pay 400 times over, right? So they could up their allocation to enough people.
Mm-hmm.
And even that wouldn't be enough people for the number of downloads that Tweetbot has. But theoretically, even if you did do that, if you're going to release that on the App Store, that's $12.99 base cost, plus you've got to add on Apple's 30% for in-app purchases, plus you've got to actually, you know, support the development of the application. You're going to be at $20 per user per month, minimum, if this is even possible. And the amount of people that are going to pay for that is very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not feasible. Simple as that.
Yeah. So a few things for me on this. I don't have like a crazy attachment to third-party Twitter apps at all. If Twitter matched what third-party apps can do feature-wise in their official app, which they can because they're the ones allowing third-party apps to do those features, then I would be perfectly fine with like using Twitter for Mac if it still existed. Or like on iOS, I use Tweetbot on iOS as well because I can have it in a column in split view next to Safari or whatever app I'm using and like browse the web while like watching Twitter on my iPad. If you're on Wi-Fi, like you see your tweets stream in. It was really awesome to do that during the election. It's awesome to do just like with like what are people talking about in the community right now.
WWDC.
Totally, yeah. And you know, if you've got to like pull to refresh, like that's a different product for me than Twitter as I think about it. And right now, like Twitter doesn't support streaming in their first party apps. On iOS, you need a third party app for that, even though like they're kind of relying on Twitter for that to work. So that I feel like that's an easy thing to add, is like an option for streaming on iOS from the first party apps. And like, to me, you know, it will suck if Tweetbot goes away, if Twitter, if it can't be in business, like that's not great. and they've been doing things to diversify their business. Like Tapbots has, a clipboard manager that they develop. They're working on their Waitbot app. Maybe, you know, they have other apps in the catalog that aren't Tweetbot, although it's like gotta be like the most successful app. Personally, like without worrying about their business, if Twitter supported streaming in their app, like that's the one thing that keeps me off of it. I don't mind their ads in their app. Like it makes sense to advertise to stay in business. Like that's a model that works for a free service. Fine. Like some of the ads might even be good and I'll use them, you know, but just have feature parity. And then we're off to the races, you know, like it's not even about like killing their watch app. Like that's not great, but I get it, I guess. It's just that they don't support everything in their first party app either, like, you know, namely streaming. And then on the Mac, like if streaming breaks with Tweetbot and I can't use it for work anymore like I do now, like I'm the same way. It is a column on my Mac. When I had the LG 5K display, it had burn-in, and the burn-in was the Tweetbot column. Like, it was bad. But like I think I can replicate that experience with TweetDeck, which is the Twitter acquired, like more like, you know, kind of media manager app that they still support on the Mac, and I think it's on the web. I don't know if you can do streaming on the web with that, if that's a possibility or not. I haven't tried it yet, but at least on the Mac,
you can, because the TweetDeck Mac app is the TweetDeck web app, just in a very thin wrapper. Like, it's a terrible Mac app.
Yeah. So, I tried this streaming today when I was writing a post about, like, you know, hey Jack, add streaming to your apps, and then we're good. And I put it side by side with Tweetbot, and the tweets appeared at the same time without issue. I've had experience with TweetDeck crashing in the past, but I think maybe they've resolved that issue. It's like you said, it's the web and a wrapper, and so it's not a great Mac app. But if it works, it works. It's just kind of a different app in general than what like a dedicated app is. But I can live with it. It's just that on iOS, you know, if they break the third-party apps with the streaming, they don't have a replacement for that. Unless, I guess, you know, they really want you to go to Safari on iOS and, you know, use TweetDeck, I guess. I don't know. But what they want people to do is use their app or use the web if you're on a desktop. And that's just not the same experience of, like, what Twitter is. Like that's like reading what's been published on Twitter, but not like what's coming in now. And I don't quite understand it, and I don't know. Like, it feels like a big part of how I work is going to change for the worse without. And I get that Twitter's a business and they need to, you know, support themselves in this way. It just seems like, if they had a good first party app, if they had it on the Mac, if they had this feature on iOS, then I would be like, cool, you know, let's go with it. It sucks for the third party developers, but the writing's been on the wall for a long time. But they're not even doing that yet, and that's kind of been the problem for a while. Is that they've got this like not so secret strategy of trying to push everyone to their first party app, where everybody else is. Like, you know, they had one mention that said I think like 1% of users use streaming, but that's because no one else can like in their apps.
And the 1% is everyone listening to this podcast.
Yeah. So, I don't know, is that if that breaks what Twitter can do in terms of, like, you know, resources and everything, but if it's possible, like, I would love to see them just add that to their Twitter app, and, you know, eventually, if it's easier to make apps on the Mac, you know, bring back a Mac app, or, you know, if it has to rely on TweetDeck for that, fine, but...
Wait, let me ask you, would you pay Twitter $1 a month, say, to put streaming on their apps?
Yeah, I would do – well, just for streaming or just for Twitter access? Yeah,
I'll just say streaming, because they're not going to get rid of free Twitter for everyone, right? And I'm not saying to remove ads or anything. It would just add – because obviously streaming does take more resources than it's not – but it's nowhere near $12 per user. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I would – I mean, as a business expense, I would do it for sure. And
it's $1 a month. I would pay for Twitter happily. Like, I love Twitter. Like, I'd give them $5 a month if they didn't show me adverts on the native apps as well.
Yeah, and just in like trying it out, you know, it's literally just streaming that keeps me off of it. The ads don't bother me. There are a lot of them, I've noticed. Like every time I went to take a screenshot, I would try to like make sure like some weird tweet isn't in the screenshot. And every like pull to refresh had a new ad. But it's fine. It's like It's Twitter. But it's, for me, it's just streaming that I care about. And I know that there are features that people like in third-party apps, like theming how it looks and like more aggressive muting and muffling features, you know, that kind of thing. And those are all nice and I get it. But like, I can only speak to what I know and like really rely on. And it's not that, like, I just take Twitter as it is. But it's just like the feature part of it, a functional part of it, of like the tweets appearing without you needing to pull refresh. It's crazy that, that they envision a version of Twitter without that for some reason. And I just don't really get it. So, at any rate, August 16th, we'll see what happens. Cause it all kind of seems murky right now. And
and there's no real clear direction on what, you know, we should do as someone who like hates it. Like, we don't really have yeah. anywhere to go.
Yeah, no, that's right. Because the thing is, like, if everyone, I don't necessarily care about Twitter's like social stuff. Like it helps to see people using it as like a social network. You know, shared interest in Apple. You see what people are talking about. But it's finding. It's like really fast RSS, I guess, of like news stories as it's breaking, like, you know, some commentary in there. But if people like leave Twitter because, you know, they don't want to use it as like their social network and they get on another, you know, kind of Twitter clone, then fine. It's just that if the service can't be the news ticker for me that it is, then, you know, in that case, I'm a little bit at a loss here. So, but I would certainly pay $1 a month to keep streaming around, you know, as like unlocked and pay for it. It's like a business expense for me. So big question mark until later this summer. We'll see what really happens. Cause like I said, the developers behind Twitterific seem to be more aggressive about like saying this is scary and we fear for the future of our app. Tapbot seems to be more confident, but also not addressing the new details that we all know about now. It was like a conflict of like, don't, because if they say like our app will break in a few months unless you yell at Twitter and we don't think they're going to listen, then no one's going to buy their app. And maybe they think that they're like buying time, but I don't know. It all seems murky right now.
But I think everyone's just kind of like going along, staying in the boat that's eventually going off the cliff, but there's nowhere else to go, so we're just slowly going towards it.
Yeah. So that's Twitter for the week. Let's talk about future iPhones that we expect to come out later this fall. There seems to be growing evidence that Apple will bundle fast charging with USB-C for the first time with iPhones. I mean, it costs around like $80 right now to add on. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so obviously last year, Apple upgraded the Lightning port to support Type-C fast charging, but they still only bundled a 5-watt adapter in the box with a USB-A cable. It seems like, and we've had a few different reports now, that for this year's 2018 iPhones, not only will the port support it, but Apple will actually ship a fast charger cabled in the box, and that will obviously, and what this, we've got this report from someone who has links to the Chinese supply chain, and they've got like a render of what this new charger looks like, and it's gone from being like the boxy rectangular things, which is Apple's current USB-C chargers, to something that's more closer to the 5-watt charger, like a slimline, you know, conical object, which makes sense because obviously if they're going to ship with every iPhone, they have to make it small to fit in packaging for economics reasons and for environmental reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then the idea, it has obviously the prongs to go into the wall on one end, and on the other side it has a USB-C port, which then means in the box you'd get a Lightning to USB-C port, which you can then plug into your phone and charge at much faster speeds. This is rated apparently at 18 watts, which is more than even what they give the iPad chargers, because the iPad chargers are like 10 watts or 12 watts. So this would be a pretty fast charger, as well as being in a slim new design. And I fully welcome it, because last year it felt pretty stingy that, you know, you could buy like the $1,000 iPhone and you're still getting like the bargain bucket 5-watt charger.
Yeah, you've got to buy the brick separate, and I think the brick is like 27 watts. It's intended for, I think, the 12-inch MacBook, but it's what you need from Apple to you know, fast charge your, or like even USB-C charge your iPhone. So I guess they're giving away like there's more wattage than you need, and then you got to buy the cable that's at least like $20 for the shorter version, I believe. So that's like crazy price for a charger. But it's the only way to do it. It sounds like next year they will, or later this year, they'll let you do it out of the box. Which, you know, like, about time. I like the new design, though, and maybe that was the holdup, is they wanted to do a better design, you know, that wouldn't be so blocky, because right now the brick is a little fat one. So if you need the faster charger, so.
I'm interested because this is what these renders show is a European charger, which is similar to the plugs of a US charger, just the ends are more like rounded off.
Mm-hmm.
For the UK, our plugs are three-prong, so we have like a triangle shape.
Yeah.
And the way these renders are, the end of the cable is not big, the end of the plug is not big enough to support three prongs there. So it looks like the UK version of the charger is going to be pretty different.
Well, so you see, it's kind of two parts. It's like the fat oval and then kind of a little diamond-shaped part that extends beyond that. I wonder if in the U.S. and the U.K. that diamond part is flat, but then it's a prong. Like that would kind of work. Actually, that wouldn't work at all in the U.S. because it's not quite tall enough. I think in the U.S. too, that would need to look different, you know. But like this is the second kind of version of the same design that we've seen. The first one was – this one was from Charger Lab. The first one was in a similar source based on –
That was from Weibo, yeah. Drawing.
Right, exactly. And it was like a sketch of what this is a rendering of, same style. But
it's not unusual for Apple to make different chargers for different reasons, of course, because like one of the coolest things they ever did was on the Apple Watch, the charger that comes in the UK box is like really unique. It has the UK prongs, it like folds down, like you can make it go flat. Mm-hmm. And they didn't add that to the iPhone chargers in the UK. It's only available on the Apple Watch chargers.
Right. Yeah, and the larger chargers, not the 5-watt, but any of Apple's larger chargers have like a duck head that comes off, and you can change out the longer cable to have a single prong, or you know, ones that takes up like one slot at the wall, or I guess you can, you know, they used to sell like an international kit that you could change out the little head to work in different countries. So, but this looks like almost like more like a traditional what you get with like USB. You know, micro USB or whatever the equivalent is. You have to assume it's white and go from there. But yeah, that's good news. Now we say 2018 iPhones. I imagine that like we don't see this premiere with the iPhone SE 2, if that's a thing, which we think it is. That it's literally like the new iPhone 10 style phones in the fall.
Yeah, like the flagships.
Yeah. Have you tried fast charging with anything that you've got around with your current iPhone?
I use the iPad charger, but not like that's like 12 watt, right? So it's still double what comes with the iPhone.
And it's not USB-C either, right?
And it's not USB-C either, okay. No. Yeah. But it is faster, like noticeably. But I don't think it's like only 10% less than what if you actually use a USB-C one. Like, because Apple says it will do on USB-C charging, it will go to 50% in half an hour. And on the iPad charger, it gets like 40% in half an hour, so it's close enough that I haven't really bothered to go anywhere else. And for me, charging my phone is like I do it overnight, really. So I'm not in like a massive rush to like save those extra, you know, those extra minutes.
Yeah.
Regardless of that, I thought it was ridiculous that last year they were still shipping, you know, the base chargers in there because it's just stupid.
Yeah. So I do have the brick that gives you fast charging and the USB-C cable that gives you fast charging. And I never use it because I always use wireless charging, like put the phone on a pad overnight and wake up and discharge. There was one time recently where I think I didn't align it the right way, which is another pain, like, you know, come on air power where we can put it anywhere on the mat and it charges, we expect. But this was with the Mophie, the black Mophie charger. I think I had it like too far off of the pad for it to charge. And so I woke up with my phone almost dead and like working at home, it's not even a problem. You just plug it up as you work throughout the day. But when I'd pull out the wired charger and did fast charging and got to like 60% before I needed to take the kids to school and do that kind of stuff. So, but it's like once since ever. And Jeff Benjamin did some testing several months ago whenever fast charging was introduced. And I think I don't know if he even published his results because it was just so like not impressive compared to like using an iPad charger or just charging in general.
You're talking about fast charging on an inductive pad, yeah?
Well, even with the wire, it's like you do get better results, but for the money, It's certainly a hard question to...
Yeah, the value trade-off isn't there. Like, the iPad charger is basically what you get with the USB-C charger.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so for me, it's like the iPhone can charge slow on the pad or kind of fast on, you know, fast, like 5 watts or 7.5 watts on the pad. And as long as it's overnight, it's not a problem unless the phone isn't lined up the right way. And then like for fast charging overnight, that's just not needed. It's really just if I'm in a pinch, and that's so rare that, you know, I bought it just to test, but it's not something I've used day to day. Now, do I think they should do what they look like they might be doing, which is bundling it with the iPhone? Yes, because it's an expensive phone. Even at $650, you know, the old iPhone price is like, that's pricey. It's a premium phone. Like, this can't be a big expense for Apple. It's not a big part of the cost. You know, it's just cheaping out, I think. And also, another part of it is USB-C. So we've not seen Apple bundle USB-C with an iPhone or an iPad or anything yet. Like, the Apple TV had a USB-C port, and that went away, but they didn't include a cable. They don't do USB-C on the iPad or Apple Watch chargers, you know? So the only way to get a Lightning to USB-C cable is, like, buy it after the fact. And so this will be a change, which is, I mean, if they're going to sell MacBooks that are all USB-C, iMacs with USB-C, then you know, begin here. And it's like, you get the brick. So maybe people will complain that they, you know, need to have more of those bricks and more cables, but they at least give you the thing in the box. And, you know, I think it's about time that they, even if this was 5 watt charging with USB-C, then that change to make the cable not USB-A, it's about time.
You know, yeah, just changing the connector is a futuristic improvement that is sort of needed at this point.
Yeah, if
and
true.
If you combine this with a previous rumor, Apple will be dropping the headphone adapter, so you won't get the Lightning to 3.5mm headphone adapter anymore, but you'll be happily exchanged for a much faster charger and a USB-C cable.
Yeah, I think it was an analyst who predicted that, and not like the Ming-Chi Kuo kind of analyst, but just like a financial analyst that's kind of taking a guess there. And there was a lot of interest around that story. It seemed like people really care, not to the level of like people, you know, the iPhone dropping the headphone jack, but that people still care about it. And I kind of thought it's like, you know, 2 years in a row of having the adapter. They give you Lightning headphones in the box. You know, people like wireless headphones now. What's the big deal? But there was some interest in the story and some pushback against them doing that. So, I'm sure some of our listeners feel that way too. So, but yeah, fast charging, no headphone jack adapter.
I will say my headphone adapter is still in the box that the iPhone 10 came in.
I feel bad about collecting things like the headphone jack adapter every year. The earbuds that I don't, you know, I used to use the earbuds before AirPods because, not the EarPod ones, because those didn't fit well with the wire, but then AirPods were fine. But I felt bad about collecting those too. It's just like junk, you know? So I'm happy with them not having the adapter in the boxes because it's one less thing to have to worry about. And they do sell it for like $9 in the stores. So it's not a crazy expense. Like, that's like the cheapest thing Apple sells, I think. But hey, fast charging, no headphone jack adapter, maybe. You know, we'll see if that's true. But first, we'll have to come across the iPhone SE 2. Maybe, surely, we really feel strongly about this, I think. But something that's been happening this week is that some rumors are claiming that the iPhone SE 2 will be more than just a speed boost and actually like a crazy radical new design. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this case manufacturer called Olexar.
I say Elixir, like the form.
Okay, like the fantastical magic. This might be made up, so yeah. It could be very poignant. But they posted, they sent around like kind of schematic drawings and like mock-ups of what they believe the SE2 looks like. And this is because they're already selling a screen protector that is shaped for the SE2 body. And the long and the short of it is they think it looks like an iPhone 10. Like, it has a pretty bezel-less screen. It has a notch cut out at the top, but it's just, you know, around 4.75 inches rather than, you know, the 5.8 inch iPhone 10.
Yeah.
But as an SE2, it's, you know, it's hard to reconcile price and, you know, budget with bezel-less screen, especially when they're still selling $699 plus iPhone 8s, like, which have massive foreheads and chins. So this is a hard one for me. Like, the fact that the schematics actually have, like, diameters and actual numbers attached to them kind of gives it some credence, because in the past, generally schematics that have numbers turn out to be accurate. Like, they come from the supply chain, wherever they call them, from the factory, but that probably means, like, someone told someone and they get smuggled out and reproduced. But if you look at in the past, we've seen, like, flagship iPhone schematics leak, and the ones that have the numbers on generally turn out to be correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we let's back up, and we've got that Eurasian regulatory database that says a flurry of new iPhones are coming, you know, in late May or early June, based on how soon it hits the database. And so we think with confidence that a new iPhone, probably an SE, is coming soon. And then this says, like, oh, this is what it will look like. And I'm in the camp of, like, if this happens, I will kind of be shocked that there's got to be some missing detail about it, but it cannot be. Like, I just do not think it can be the cheap iPhone. And the iPhone SE cost, you know, like $400 or so whenever it was introduced. And I think they dropped the price and upped the storage at some point. I'm not sure what it sells for now, but it's not what it was. It was reduced at some point. And this would be a very pricey phone. Like, the only way this being possible is if they could, like, have, like, this is the iPhone SE 2 and this is the iPhone SE 4, you know, and the 2 is, like, you know, chin and bezel and a home button, and the 4 is, like, iPhone 10 style with no home button and, like, Face ID. But I just feel like this is part of, like, Elixir's marketing budget to do all of this, and I just cannot imagine it. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, like, flaw in terms of the idea is that so far the only way to do the iPhone 10 style fully bezel-less design, apart from the notch, is to use an OLED display. And I think it's pretty obvious that this will be using LCD. So if you look at all of the Android phones that are all shamelessly copying, following the iPhone 10's footsteps, they all have a notch at the top, and then they don't have a slim bezel at the bottom. They all have chins of some description, right? They're not as big as the iPhone 8's chins, but they're substantial, like a centimeter or two. Mm-hmm. And that's because, you to date, no one has curved an LCD screen. And whereas what Apple does with the iPhone 10 is they have the OLED screen carries on and gets curled back underneath itself. So, like, the connectors at the end of the display, like the ribbon cable and stuff, they're, like, folded back on themselves inside the device, but when you look at it as a customer, you don't see that. You just see a screen that goes all the way to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these renders and the screen protector goes all the way to the bottom, but, you know, it's just technically impossible for anyone to go all the way to the bottom of the phone. Like, otherwise all of these Android manufacturers would have done it by now, and they clearly don't.
Yeah.
I would not rule out the possibility that there is an SE revision that looks more like an iPhone 10 than the current SE. But it would have to be a lot more compromised than I think what this kind of, like, Photoshop mock-up shows. For a start, one thing that is interesting on this schematics is that the width of the notch cutout is 1.8 centimeters, which is almost half what it is on the current iPhone 10. What that suggests to me is the Face ID sensor might not be there. But then how do you unlock it? That's another question.
Yeah. Like, only passcode.
Because if it's bezel-less, then you haven't got a button. So it's an open question there. Maybe they move the earpiece somewhere else. Like, so what I had in my head maybe is that, forget what Elixir shows directly, but imagine a small chin on the bottom and then that same size on the top edge plus the notch. And in the top edge forehead, that houses the camera and the earpiece, you know, like the bit that sticks, the physical thing that you can hear the speaker through, the front speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And then they still have the notch, which holds the Face ID. And so it would be significantly reduced bezels from last year, and obviously most of the phones. It would still resemble the iPhone X style, but it wouldn't quite be as good, and it would kind of actually be practical in the limits of what an LCD device can do. And maybe it probably wouldn't be as cheap as what the current SE either is. Maybe they take it to like a $500 price point, for instance.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Now, there was a Mercator report that said, and they've had another report before this that said that that a case supplier or a case maker, accessory maker, said that the iPhone SE was going to be coming out this month, at the end of this month, not June, but this month. And they've had another report, presumably from another source, that said, this is just like chatter, that the SE2 will be coming out in September with Face ID, and the design is undecided. Now, I don't think that undecided design is like a thing here. They even say that Apple's trying to figure out between like 4 inches and 6 inches. And I feel like that's just two different phones. And we have that other rumor about the iPhone X style 6.1-inch LCD phone. And so I feel like the Mercator story of late is just confusing that, you know, for some reason. Because that would be a September phone with 6 inches and Face ID.
And at this point, Apple is definitely not undecided.
Yeah. I think that's just crazy. So,
by the way, the 6.1-inch rumor still has the same problem in the, if it looks like an iPhone X, but it's LCD, what are they doing with the bottom chin area?
Yeah, well, it's a bigger phone, so there's more space to work it out, I guess. But yeah, I know what you mean. Maybe it has, maybe it's not totally bezel. It's like it's got the kind of compromised bottom. I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, if you take it as iPhone X style, that means reduced bezels, but with a notch, right? It doesn't necessarily mean no bezels at all, like what the current iPhone X has at the bottom.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, I am not convinced by the Elixir, you know, claimed leak. I think that it's kind of like their attempt to get some attention. Maybe they think it's true, but I don't think so.
I mean, they are selling. Like, you can order a notched,
yeah, but
4-inch.
That in itself is stupid, to sell something before the phone is even out or announced. Like, I think that adds to the complication, not helps.
You know? And it probably doesn't cost them that much.
Right. Like people sold teardrop iPhone 5 cases before the iPhone 4S was out, and that wasn't a thing. I think that this gets Elixir a lot of attention, but not the good kind. But in this case, like it's still attention, so it gets them to be discussed. It would be cool if this existed, I guess, because like part of it is like the iPhone 6. Apple took the iPhone 6 and then made the whole thing screen, you know, and then you get the iPhone 10 out of that, which ends up being, instead of a 4.7-inch phone with no bezel, you get a 5.8-inch phone with no bezel. It's a much bigger screen, and it's harder to use one-handed. But if you took the iPhone 6 and just cut off the bezel, but it was like a bezel-less 4.7-inch phone, I think that'd still be really cool. And you know, it'd just be easier to use one-handed than even the iPhone X is.
And I think they'll do that one day.
Maybe.
But not whilst it still costs them too much.
Yeah, it's not going to be the budget phone, especially when
it won't be the budget phone for a few years. Like,
right.
Especially
right.
When they're still selling the iPhone 8 and the 8 Plus. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are you going to do there? Like, you can't have that at $700 upwards and it'd be like, we got this $450 phone that has no chin and forehead. It's like, you're just cannibalizing your lineup for like no reason.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of hard to reach phones and the iPhone X, I want to move over to our iOS 12 wish list before we get to WWDC. And I think one of the themes in mind is that the iPhone X is hard to use one handed for me still. And so, are you ready to kick this off with iOS 12 wish list? All right, I'm going to go first. I know I went first last time too, but I'm going to knock it out. So,
wow, you're so greedy.
Yeah, the first thing I want to say is that this list, in the context of the rumors that we expect iOS 12 to be kind of meh, and you know, kind of focus on stability improvements, which is cool, and not shining new features that are going to be pushed off until next year, we believe. It's kind of difficult to think about like hitting a balance between cool new features that we've always wanted but think are just too pie in the sky for this year, and then also like interesting enough to discuss. Like, you know, one thing I mentioned before the show to you was I wish Reminders was easier to use you know, to add location to instead of time to, that it's easy to check off items and it's easy to use Siri to make a new item. But, you know, but like, I don't even feel like that's going to happen this year. That
it could, like, maybe if they're going to, because I interpret the, you know, performance and stability stuff not to mean there's no new features at all. It just means there is not like fundamental massive changes like the rumored, you know, new home screen design.
Yeah. Okay. But
if those, I mean, this is open to interpretation, right? I'm not saying I'm correct.
Yeah.
But you could say, okay, all these engineers that would have been working their way off, you know, like last year they were all working on drag and drop for the iPad, for instance, or, you know, big split screen multitasking or the iPhone X navigation, like, all of that stuff are obviously big projects. This year they could say, you know, we're going to have like five features that we talk about at the keynote, but also we've just got engineers like who aren't so tied down doing all this crazy stuff that maybe they're just going to tweak how Reminders works and fix the flow of the UI and adding an event and like all those things that are on this to-do list somewhere inside Apple that just always get bumped away because they're always working on these like bumper sticker massive things. Yeah. Maybe this year they fill out some of the lower things in the list and, you know, they push off the bigger stuff to iOS 13 or whatever. I don't think maybe. That's impossible.
Okay. Well, I'm going to begin my list. And some of these things I think are like impossible, but then some of them I just want so bad that I hope they're true.
Starting, I mean, it is a wish list, remember? Right. We're not going for prediction accuracy here.
Sure. So starting with Control Center on the iPhone X, I think it's fine on every other iPhone, but iPhone X, I still don't like that it's in the top right corner. I think it's clever how they put it somewhere that kind of represents like controls. If you use your iPhone in landscape mode, it makes no sense at all because you lose that cleverness about it. And I think that the iPhone 10 Plus or whatever it's called, you know, you will use landscape on that phone more often. But all that aside, like, it's been a problem since day one. And for me, like, it's still a problem of like conveniently opening Control Center because I needed to use reachability or like shuffle the phone in my hand to reach it. And then once it activates, the controls are not like the most bottom, they're kind of centered. Some of them are higher than I'd like them to be. Like if it was totally from the bottom up, I think everything would be fine. They kind of like center it so that you're, you know, it's like balanced, but it's not the most user friendly. And so I really hope in iOS 12 that they give you an option to make it from the bottom. Like even if you lose the cleverness of it, like bottom corner of the same side.
So you just have it like bottom corner. And then if you go from anywhere else, it does the normal multitasking switcher stuff.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because right now they're playing off with a notch. It's like, okay. But, you know, if you use your phone like in Safari in landscape mode and you're browsing the web and you want a Control Center, it's the corner but no notch. So, like, corner's fine.
Yeah, because there's no status bar on the iPhone X in landscape.
Yeah. So please change that, you know, or give an option, like bury it under accessibility. But give an option because I think it's just – I think it's, like, pretty universal. Like, no one really likes it better that way than from the bottom. I get why they did it because they have the gesture to unlock the phone and, like, move it between apps and stuff like that. But I, using my phone on my right hand, I'm never conflicting with that corner. And I think it would be better for me there and probably a lot of other people. So move Control Center from the hidden corner that I said. Because, frankly, like, it's easier for me to have, like, the – remote app and the home app lower on my home screen and just like unlock and open the full app than it is to like stretch to the corner and then like open the tiles. And so that's fine for those two apps. But then like brightness and volume and like play controls and all this other stuff is in Control Center. And I used to use Control Center all the time before the iPhone X. And now I still use it because I need it, but it's not the customer sat for me is gone way down on that.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you use reachability on the iPhone X?
All throughout the day, yes.
Okay. So, because one of my ideas was a setting to replace the pull down on the bar to open Control Center rather than do reachability.
Yeah, no, I often do reachability to get to Control Center, but I often use reachability just in apps to use things one-handed because the iPhone is too tall for me to use one-handed otherwise.
Yeah, I think my hands are slightly bigger because I don't have a need for reachability. I don't even think I've got it switched on.
Yeah, you're taller than I am in general, so yeah.
Yeah, I do struggle, though, to reach the right-hand corner for the Control Center stuff, so I completely agree that it's a problem there. I'm just not sure if that compromising the bottom corner of the thing that you swipe up on to do, you know, central system navigation of closing apps, That's dangerous. Like, part of the joy of using that thing is it doesn't matter where from the bottom you go, you're done. And you know how you can, like, you don't have to go in a horizontal line to switch apps. You can do like an arc from the left, you can do an arc from the right, like, mm-hmm. and that kind of like adapts depending on you're holding in your left hand or you're holding in your right hand, like with your ambidextrous. Like, there's a lot of flexibility from them reserving that whole bottom space just for that one purpose.
Yeah. Well, the other option is what we saw in that one video before the iPhone 10 was even out, which was there was like a tile or something for Control Center where you pushed up and you got like multitasking, or you got like Control Center first. Remember that? It was different.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. at the moment, if you go into the multitasking switcher with all the cards, it puts the app you were just on in like to the right, but on this like leaked video, which I think Rambo leaked and found it in the firmware.
Yeah.
The rightmost card would be the Control Center stuff, and you could tap it. So it would be slower because you have to open the multitasking switcher, which involves a pause, and then tap on the card to get to the Control Center stuff.
Yeah. So maybe add a toggle would be
more
for that.
In line with how the iPad works.
This year, yeah, so far, right.
Yeah, because the iPad puts Control Center to the right of multitasking switcher cards.
Yeah. I would also like to be able to, like, you know how you can add tiles to the Control Center and rearrange them however you like. That's handy.
Well, hang on. You can't rearrange them however you like.
Well, the ones that you can add, you can.
Yeah, the bottom row.
Yeah, and so my next request is to be able to move the whole grid. Like, right now the UI...
Oh, you stole one of mine. That's why I was clarifying.
Yeah. Right now the UI for it is not good anyway, because it's like one menu... And then you have to like check your Control Center and like, do I like that? But what it should be is like you're in the Control Center, you know, and in some way you can just like move things around, you know, like enter, hold and press for a long time, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, moving those around will be great, because basically I want everything to be like bottom up UI for these tall phones. And have important things at the bottom and less important things on top. And we're still not really there yet. And the phones are getting taller, so.
Yeah, this is one of mine, which is a fully customizable Control Center. And that includes being able to activate like a jiggle mode and rearrange all of the tiles, all of the little blocks, not just the, you know, the rows at the bottom, but like the music control, you could put it in the middle row, or like the brightness and volume. I want to put like the brightness slider on the very right-hand side and the volume slider on the very right. Like, I don't like how they're both next to each other, because you kind of have to be more accurate in sliding up a particular one.
Mm-hmm.
And even the system for rearranging the ones you can toggle on and off yourself is like indirect, because you're looking at a flat 2D list
right.
when it ends up coming out on a grid. And like, unless you count, you don't even know if you've finished a clean line. Like, for me, I can't have the ones at the bottom have like a one straggling icon there. I want to like complete the rows. So you have to like mix it up to even work out what's going on.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, so that is... one of the parts. I would also just like the kind of more flexibility in the controls and stuff you can have there. So that means more system actions, support for third-party apps to be able to put their actions in there, and not just like launch the app shortcut, but also long press to do something within it. Like how the home app works, right? You have a little icon, and then if you press on it, it expands and shows you the favorite scenes and accessories. Also, if you really want to go the whole mile, as well as rearranging, I'd love to be able to say like, keep the home app in the expanded state, like make it a rectangle as big as the
music
player.
That's a cool
rather
idea.
Than it having to be that tiny little one, and obviously apply that to like every app on the system.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. And continuing that, my iPhone is too big for my baby hands. I would also like so you know, on the lock screen of the iPhone 10, how you have those two controls at the bottom, you've got flashlight and camera, and then camera is also like a swipe across. I would like to be able to like change those, you know, like I think they're handy, but flashlight is something I use so often that I want it to always be my lock screen. In camera, I can get to just as fast with a swipe, and I often do that. And so I would like to be able to put like HomeKit there, or something else, you know, like Apple. I don't know what, I guess HomeKit would be the big one, and then maybe like Apple TV remote. But, you know, lock screen customization, just like you can with the Control Center, but on the lock screen.
Yeah, I'd like that too. I'd probably keep the camera there because I like pressing the button. I don't like the swiping. I'd rather they gave some other thing to the swipe.
Yeah.
Like, Because I don't like how you have to swipe to do it. That feels like old, whereas pressing the button and getting the nice haptic feedback on it like feels like an actual camera. Mm-hmm. Like, they could put control center on the right-hand swipe, but like, rather than having to go to the very top.
Like, yes, please.
But yeah, I'd love to be able to change to one on the left. Like, I don't use the torch that often, mm-hmm. so I'd love to be able to put, like, home there or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. The next really big thing for me on my list of just, like, things that I really hope happen this year, whether it's possible or not, is just that multitasking on the iPad, like, something better than what it is, which is you need to have all of your apps in your dock if you want to be able to multitask with all of your apps. So we used to complain about the old way, which was you had the side picker, which was like scroll, and now it's that you've got to have the app in your dock, whether it's like in a folder or just on the dock, but you can't go back to your home screen without like closing out the app that you're in and then going to the home screen to multitask. So it's really a pain. I don't like that, because then it's like every app needs to be in the dock if you want to ever multitask with it. And it's just like, in beta period, it felt like they're going to finish this, and they never did.
And we complained about this repetitively.
Yes.
We complained about it. I'm pretty sure the immediate WWDC after show that we did, we complained about it during the betas. You complain about it when it shipped. I have a radar that was obviously marked as dupe describing this exact problem. Because I don't think you should have to do like multi-hand finger gymnastics to multitask the app in the foreground and an app that isn't in your dock. Like, it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, it literally makes me use my iPad less. I've used my iPad less on iOS 11 than I did with iOS 9 and 10. And it's because of that. It's like, my dock isn't the apps that I use most frequently. It's, I kind of keep a stock configuration on my dock. And then like my favorite apps are like on home pages, you know, usually page one, but it's not the dock. Like, I use the dock differently than that. And on the iPad, the best thing to do is to put your apps on the dock, and it's like,
yeah, but that's like a workaround, right?
It's a hack. Yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
And before everyone starts having a go at us, I know that you can multitask any app from the home screen with the app that you have foreground, but to do it, you have to press the home button or do the gesture to go to the home screen. Go and find the app that you want to multitask with that isn't in your dock. Start to jiggle it, but don't actually jiggle it so it starts moving. Then move the icon around. Then use your other hand to go back to the app that you had open before, and then drag the icon that you've got with your like other dormant hand to a Sycon. Like, there's so many steps. And then the second point is, Apple does not like suggest that people use the dock as a catch-all to put every single app in it. I know you can put up to like 15 apps in there now, but if you look at all of the iPad marketing screenshots, they have 5 apps in the dock, 4 apps in the dock. Like, they want you to use the home screen like an actual home screen.
Yeah.
Like, the putting everything in the dock thing is a hack to get around a flaw in how they designed the multitasking system.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have a home screen anymore if you were meant to have all of your apps in the dock. And the model of home screens for apps that you never multitask with, like settings, because it can't. And then dock is for apps that you actually multitask in. Like, that's not good. You wouldn't design it that way from day one. Like, they're adapting what was there for iPad, and it's just not what they would do from day one. And I fear that they will not make this change on iOS 12, that it will be iOS 13, part of like some big overhaul. But it doesn't need to be that way. Like, they could kind of just put like a launch pad icon like they have on iCloud.com or Mac, and that would be like your button to access all of your apps on your iPad. Pulling down from that, it's not your home screen, it's not your dock, it's different, and it's like a menu for your other apps. Like, do that.
I've thought about this quite a lot because it really annoys me. And one thing they could do is a kind of combination of what the iOS 9 style was and what this style is. Because at the moment, you can get in situations where you can swipe from the right-hand side and have nothing happen because you don't have an app, like, off to the side there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do the swipe gesture, like a right-hand edge swipe gesture, and it just does nothing at all. And you don't even get feedback that nothing's happening, like, just nothing happens. So instead, if there is no app already there, swiping over could bring up the recent app scrolling pane, right? And you could scroll through and pick one out, and then it would pop out into a multitasking view.
Yeah.
That'd be all right, although, again, we'd all complain about scrolling, but it's offset by the fact you can put more in the dock, you can go to the home screen, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought they might they might do is you pull up the dock and it has like your set of five apps. If you like swipe left or right on the dock, it could be like a pager and then just have all your recent apps. Because at the moment they have three recent apps down there, basically. Like there's some proactive ones as well, but they have like three. I just thought you could like swipe on that and it like expand out and just show like all your recent apps in a little window. And then you could just drag it straight from the dock straight to a sidebar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's my idea.
Yeah.
Apple, please do it.
Okay.
But I agree with you that based on the rumors, it sounds like all the big iPad changes have been pushed to next year.
Which is a shame.
So I am not hopeful for that as much as I want it.
We did that with iPad, right? It was like iOS 9 whenever you got the swipe thing, and then or iOS 8, and then iOS 9 still had it, right?
And no, 9 introduced it, and that was the first one.
Oh, okay. All right. And then 10 had it, and we're on 11 now? Okay. I'm just backing up. But we had it for 2 years, so we'll have this bad thing for 2 years as well. Right. Okay. Next thing is, I'm not going to say dark mode, but I am going to – the theme here is black, which is that it's a few bullet points. But the wallet app, I hate that it has a white background. And so it used to have like the dark transparent background. Bring that back or something. Like they had a video at WWDC about like wayfinding, and that was because they didn't think it was like logical in the hierarchy, but like nothing on iOS is logical in the hierarchy anymore. And
they have plenty of other apps that still have a dark translucent background.
Right, right.
Safari like, tab screen, reminders.
Apple TV remote, like if you go to that and then you go to like the tech search, your remote app comes down and your wallpaper is behind it. Like it's totally weird, does not match anything else on iOS. But it's not a white background.
What really annoys me about the white, I don't understand why they went from a dark translucency to white.
Right.
Why didn't they go to black or a dark gray? Like, it would look so much nicer.
Like, to me, the translucency made more sense because it was like, it's back there somewhere blurred out in the background. But, like, that's the layer beneath this app that you're on top of. Like, the app is above your home screen, your wallpaper. The white one is just like, they just gave it like, you know, a piece of paper behind it or something. I don't know, but it's not good.
Here's what I'd say about the translucency, right? Because it's hard to incorporate the background translucency on every application design. Like Mail, you could never really have it. Or even though actually, if you go on a thread on Mail, it actually does it. But
on a light style.
But you know what I mean? Like if you go in Messages, there'd be no way for them to like peek the background wallpaper in the Messages app. So getting rid of that idea and standardizing on like solid colors would be fine. I just think they chose the wrong solid color.
They did.
And
yeah.
The big hint, if you look at the wallet app icon, it is a wallet on a black icon.
Yes.
And then you press this black icon and it launches the wallet app with a white background. It looks like, hello?
Yeah, yeah.
And connect the dots, please.
The next thing is you can have a black wallpaper as your background, like iPhone 1 style. And on the iPhone 10 with OLED, it looks really cool because it just looks literally like pixels not lighting up. And Apple even gives you, in like the wallpaper section of the settings app, a black wallpaper for you to choose. You don't have to go out and find it. They give you one. I think it looks cool, but I cannot use it because I think that the dock being transparent, or translucent, you know, shade, and folders look really ugly. They're like gray color and it doesn't look pretty to me at all. If they were like the metal tone that they used to be or anything else that wasn't just like gray, they look broken to me with a black background. I would be happy with it, but I cannot use a black wallpaper because to me, the dock and the folders become just like ugly gray. And it detracts from the way that the appeal of the iPhone has for me. And so I hope that dock and folders get some kind of a tweak to the design that makes them more compatible with a black wallpaper so that they look, you know, like maybe they react to their icon color.
Just give them a solid color and a border.
Yeah, something. But just like the gray is just like too dull. And so I don't like it.
Yeah. Like I, in general, like going to a bit of like a high level, I wish they'd reduce the amount of transparency and the glossy look system wide. Like they could tone it down a lot. Like I think it's fine for like the background of Control Center or the background of, you know, like a modal view that pops up and it gives you like that hierarchy, but you can kind of peek at what's still behind.
Yeah.
But for things like a folder, the icon on the home screen, I don't, that, like, it doesn't really, work. Like the dot kind of, but like you say, you can get color patterns that make it look really bad.
Well, and it's always like way cooler in the demo video than like actually device. Yeah. Like to me, my background is a photo of my son and his shirt is like a bold blue color. And so that kind of pulls through. It looks kind of cool, but the folders are just like too small for it to really have that effect on, you know, it's not enough material. And so they just look like weird skin tone, like a band-aid colored. I don't like that. I hope I get some kind of a change. I don't know.
For the dock, they could on the iPhone 10. I know they trace the dock back, you know, background material with the curves on the edges. I wouldn't be opposed to them just getting rid of the background on the dock altogether.
Right. Like why even for the for the folders, like make that like a solid circle, I guess, or you know, like outline of a circle or something. But
well, not a circle because a circle is ugly.
Well, I mean, I would be okay with a circle even, like versus the way they look with the black background. They're like app shaped folders, which is kind of clever. But yeah, like even with the dock like going away completely, I'd be okay with that. Like it's not the function there is that this is an important part of your phone that you can put things on. But if, you know, we kind of get it. And if you don't, then you've got like a, you know, it's a separate section of your phone, you know?
And they already started this iPhone 10 because they took the labels off the dock.
Yeah, they did. So.
And on iOS 11, I mean, they started. So they already know that it's like a privileged area, so you don't need the text labels.
Yeah, yeah. All right, next thing on my list, a couple of lock screen things. One thing I've mentioned here before is that when you have Wi-Fi calling on your iPhone, which is like the better experience of like getting your calls everywhere. If you get like a bad signal, then you can use your Wi-Fi and you get better service that way. I think it helps out with getting calls on your Mac and your iPad, etc. But if you do that, then on the iPhone 10, on the lock screen, it will say AT&T WIF in my case. And it scrolls to say Wi-Fi, but it doesn't quite fit. So I mentioned before, I just want to mention, and for the sake of a wish list, that I want them to change that. Just say AT&T. When I scroll down to Control Center in some way, gymnastics, then say AT&T Wi-Fi. But never compromise and just put like part of a word. It's ugly. It's not tasteful. So I think it's an oversight.
What would be your suggestion for a carrier name that is long? Not like with Wi-Fi on or off, but let's say my carrier name is like 18 characters, so it doesn't fit in the notch by itself.
Well, so Verizon is one, and that won't fit on its own, I think, or with Wi-Fi calling at least. And they go VZW, which I think is pretty cool, like something that fits, some contraction or, you know, like simplification of it, but not, you know, or if you can't fit carriers, then like don't put it there, just put a signal there. I mean,
they could definitely do that. Like,
yeah. They don't put the carrier on the...
They shouldn't
show
the carrier unless you're roaming to a different carrier.
Yeah, they don't put the carrier like on the home screen or like in apps, just the time. And then you only see the carrier whenever you pull down. You just get the signals on the right side. So, you know, I think they need to change that.
And it's just static text. It's kind of meaningless, right? Like for me, it always says PlusNet. Always.
Yeah.
And then... That's it. It's like great.
It's not just the iPhone 10 either. Like this was a problem on the iPhone SE that whenever I reviewed it, I could have too much going on my status bar with no notch. It was just too much going on up there. And then it would be, you know, like AT&T dot, 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 and it would scroll and it, you know, so something to address that. And then also like I had a bug one time in one of the betas where my lock screen had no, clock on it, like the big time in the center and date. And I liked that better, but I also, you know, it's like, then you just have the photo, like it feels better. You know, I've got my watch, this could be an option or, you know, something, but, I prefer the time to not be on the lock screen at all. So that it's just like my lock screen photo of my son and that's it. And especially not the big lock from the iPhone 10. Like I get it. It's locked. It's unlocked. Okay, cool. Be smaller. But, if they are going to have the time there and the date there, I think that the wispy text is kind of dated now. Like it feels like an old part of iOS 7. And, it's changed a little bit since then, but, Android kind of has a style on some launchers where it's like that, but thicker. And I think this is a place where if the time was literally bolder, and maybe even the date was bolder too, at least the time. It would look cool, like stylized, that we're kind of in a phase right now that that is more trendy than what we have, that what we have looks kind of like old and dated, especially under the big padlock. So either go away or get bolder, one or the other, but not what it is.
So either take up more of my screen or take up none of it.
Yeah, like because it just looks like someone took a text editor over the photo of my son and like wrote the time in. Not that it's like part of the system, and so it's just weird. I don't like it the way it looks.
Yeah, I would like it if they got rid of the carrier name, put the 4-digit time in the notch area, and didn't even bother with the date, and then just have a big picture.
Wow. All right, I'll knock out a few more. Kind of quickly, and then I've got one big one that's like, yeah, right. But in the home app, there are some things you just can't do that you need a third-party HomeKit app for, like the third-party home app. For example, one is an automation based on a trigger of if a temperature sensor goes to a certain degree, you want to trigger an event to happen. I think you need a third-party app to do that, and that the third-party apps are using Apple's APIs to give you the ability to do things that you can't do in HomeKit with Apple's first-party app. And I don't get that. Like, why on earth are they not offering – like, is it because they want to simplify things and not give you as much to get confused by, or do they just not finish it? And I think it's that they didn't finish it.
I will say there is some element of simplification there, because the HomeKit APIs are very vast. Like, there's – a load of random conditionals and events and stuff that you can set up. And Apple's going for like the 90% approach of like not exposing every single one of those options in the home app, yeah, like some of the third-party apps choose to do, because they're more like advanced.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are definitely parts of the API that should be exposed in the UI, like for instance doing a temperature conditional, or the one that I hit is that if you have a smart button, you can't do a toggle option.
That's like a functional thing. Like they need to add states, and they – you can kind of hack it, but it's not easy to do.
Yeah, I mean, if you do a third-party home app, you can do like an automation where if the light is already on, turn it off. If it's not off, turn it on. And then you attach that up to the button, and it kind of gives you the toggle.
Yeah, and it's like mental gymnastics for me that I hate. I wish that they just said, like, assume everyone's going to use the home app and make it as easy as possible to do. And that's not the case yet. Like, the fact that I need to recommend a paid app for the best experience with some automations is kind of crazy to me. I think zones are another thing. I'm not sure that you can create zones. I think you can get rid of them. I'm not sure that you can create zones in the home app. That's someone
you can create them. You can create them.
You can create them.
If you click on if you edit the room, mm-hmm, and then you tap on the zone, it'll have like create new. And
okay. It's just so buried. But the thing with the automation with temperature, that is like, yeah, someone was like, I don't think you can do that. I'm like, no, I think you can. I'm pretty sure you can. But you got to use another app. It's like, that's wild. So bring it on to the home app.
By the way, if you make an automation in another app that you can't make in the home app, but then you go to the automations page of the home app, does it just not show up?
It shows up. It does.
Huh.
Yep. And there are some things that you can do in the home app that you can't do in third-party apps. So you need both if you want like the full experience. But I think like this isn't true anymore, I don't think, but at least last year it was that sunset and sunrise couldn't be triggers in third-party apps. They might have fixed that by now, but
yeah, that's in the API now for okay, sure.
Yeah, but hey, it's just crazy to me because I don't think the home app is simple anyway, so you're not doing any favors by adding another layer of go out and find another app to do this if you want to have, you know, because it should just be like, if you can think about it and it's possible with the API, then you can do it in the home app, not learning another app to manage. So that's no good. The other kind of easy thing on my list, or simpler thing on my list, is in Apple Music or the music app, if you have an artist in your library and they put out new music, nothing to do with Connect, nothing to do with like an opt-in system, but just let me know that they've got new music, you know, like, it's cool if it's on a playlist. It's cool if it's like in a section for me, but like I would like an alert, you know. One thing that happened recently is a band I like had like versions of songs that were on Apple Music that I didn't know about, and they were in my wife's library, and she was playing them. I didn't know this existed because like I'm not gonna go and look every day, and it wasn't recommended anywhere. But like I don't even want to like have to go and look at a playlist. I just want to have like an alert. Someone that you favorite or is in your library even, has new content that you might want, you know? And so I like that because it feels like it's just way too much of an effort that you need to track activity from artists that you can't just have it appear, like subscribe to an artist or even just get an alert about, hey, there's a new album. And you know, Apple's fix eventually will be that they get so good at recommendations that they show it to you as needed. But I think that is too passive for me. I want like, hey, new music, here's an alert. And I'm like,
for sure.
Yeah.
Like the Connect is a graveyard. Like if you go on any big artist, their last post on Connect is from over a year ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why Connect's still there. Get rid of Connect completely. Let people follow artists for notifications and alerts when they do stuff. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then if they release a new album, you can get an alert. If you don't want the alerts, you just unfollow them. It doesn't affect the discovery of the For You stuff. It's just purely you can follow to get, you know, more notifications. If they really want to go all out, they can integrate like, oh, now this person's doing a concert near you. Do you want to, you know, go off and buy tickets, for instance? Like the Connect, oh, we're posting to social media stuff is just completely dead. So they don't need that anymore. Yeah. Just simplify it down to the same way they simplified the social friends music to, this is what you're listening to. It's completely passive. You don't have to like have them go and post that I'm listening to something and you can see it. You can just go on the feed and see it. That should be what it's like for, you know, like celebrity artists. Mm-hmm. You can just follow them and it gives you alerts when the feed gets updated and they've posted new albums or new music.
Yeah. I've got some more things on my list, but I think I'll save them for another discussion maybe. But the next thing is last thing on my list is kind of like very zoomed out high level, and there's no way it's going to happen this year if ever. But I would like for like iOS the platform and like Siri the unifier between like iOS and macOS and watchOS, etc. To be like this grand assistant that, you know, talks to Apple's apps and you know, third-party apps as needed and as approved, that kind of replaces like things as my task manager, where I'll like manually put in tasks to do, like work out every day and meet a goal and, you know, work on this story, you know, forward this email to things because I want it on my task list and have the content there, to have like, you know, my task manager be iOS, not things. You know, things can be a part of it, but not like the thing. And then like the lock screen, or like a part of, you know, like the, you know, yeah, the lock screen. I mean, you can swipe down and see the lock screen, you know, whatever they call it, like the cover sheet, and have that be like the one big task, you know, list. And part of it is that the activity app has a daily goal of meet your, you know, activity rings, and it's like a tile there, and you know, like here are 500 emails, it's one tile, you tap to expand it and then you can like, you know, address them there. Things like it's Tuesday, so take out the trash, so you do tap that one off, and you can kind of create this experience with widgets on the like home page zero, by having like, you know, some, you can like your reminders widget there, and you can do like mail, but like some of those widgets are just not intended the way that I envision. Like, I think the mail one is like you have new messages from VIPs or something like that. So,
it's not like a list of the emails, it's photos of
VIP contacts. Yeah. So yeah. I feel like Apple is so close that they've got the services and they've got the platform and they've got the assistant and they've got AI going on and machine learning happening over here. But they've not like given you, this is like the Siri screen, not the place where you ask for requests, but like this is everything presented in one UI. And you could even plug in like Siri Kit apps, you know, and they're a factor there too. But just like one clean UI of like intelligent assistant. This is what you need to know stuff. Exactly. Yeah.
This is basically what like Google Now offered on Android, right?
Yeah, I think Google Now is pretty close to it. I mean, it's hard to say like if that's what I want, then go to Android, because, you know, like I specifically want like I think the Siri Watch Face is like the closest thing to it, honestly, and that doesn't incorporate third party, you know, services yet. But the Siri Watch Face has got to be like the closest thing to it. But then
so like a Siri Watch Face expanded to feel like the lock screen plus third party integration with it would be pretty spot on, right?
Yeah, Siri Watch Face, like, you know how they say that, you know, first thing in the morning you get like a Good Morning HomeKit scene recommended, you get like the weather, if it will storm at 2 p.m you will see the tile for weather in the morning, because it's relevant to your day that in 6 hours you need an umbrella, and you should know now before you leave the home. But then my complaint within the WatchOS show was that you need something to pull down for alerts. I want all of that like in one scrollable screen. So alerts, like do reminders, tasks, kind of things. You know, your activity rings and like it's just like all your like bird's eye view of your day, basically.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, and I feel like this is like possible, and it's not like crazy to do, and it would make like iOS feel like, man, I can't ever leave this behind. And you know, I don't think we're gonna get that this year, if ever, but I'd love it. So
yeah, I mean, like you say, like we've already got a lot of the constituent parts of what you describe. It just needs to be like put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, I'm going to throw it over to you now. Anything that I haven't touched on yet?
Well, you managed to successfully exhaust and cross off a lot of my list items.
Right.
As ever, I could nitpick a load of stuff, but I've got a few high-level things that I will cover that we haven't already just talked about. In the home app, I kind of... like, I don't like that everything, like every accessory is the same round rectangle tile. Like, there needs to be more variation there. If I have a light, especially on like the home, you know, the home favorites, I want the light representation to be like the control center brightness, like an actual slider on the screen. And I can slide it directly there and it looks like a light. I can scroll it. Because at the moment, like, as soon as you, even if you have like four accessories, they all start to just blend together because they're all the same shape. They all have like small icons that are hard to tell apart, especially if you all have lights, like all the lights look the same. Like, I have four ceiling lights that are just in a row. It's like, oh, I don't know what's going on. And to interact with them, you have to like do the force touch thing and then scroll, and it's all weird and janky and kind of like not consistent with other stuff, which you could just tap on. And like, it feels like in the home app, all accessories are treated the same, and it needs more like hierarchy and like convenient shortcuts for specific like common actions. For instance, turn everything off in one room. Like, if you're in a room, if you're looking at a room view, there should just be like an on-off button at the top, which just lets you like turn everything off in the room in one go. But it doesn't exist.
Yeah, you know the model of, so in the home app you've got three tabs: home, rooms, automation, and then homes is like you can scroll between rooms, and they show you your favorite scenes and then all of your accessories for that room. I would like a vertically scrolling list view of organized by rooms like that, but it would look kind of like the bubbles, the capsules for AirPlay 2 speakers and how you can expand them. But it would be like rooms, you tap to expand them. It's not your favorites list, which is like what you manually favorite and organize yourself. But like it's just rooms, alphabetical. Tap to expand the tiles, and then I think that'd be so much faster and like more fluid than this like scroll between entire screens or use the list thing and then pick from that. Like, I think it could be a lot more fluid than it is now.
Yeah, especially the current list thing they have, which is like they just reuse a system control which is meant for picking between like actions to perform on something.
Yeah,
like it's not a navigation, it's not designed to be a navigation element. Like, it's a pop-up modal for things, and then the top button is settings which take you to a thing. Like, there's no hierarchy there or like organization.
Yeah.
Like, what you're kind of describing is like when you're in Mail and you have loads of conversations, you can like tap the little arrows and expand them in one
sure,
go.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
You just have it all in one view. You can tap, go. That'd be great. Like, it'd be more like an actual table. Because I agree, like, the room situation, you have to like scroll and it takes ages for the scroll to finish before you can do something else. And it's like, it's a bit of a mess. Like, on the whole, I kind of like the home app, but there's a lot of stuff where I feel like everything's too generic and too like dashboardy versus like getting stuff done.
I have literally thought that the home that I rent now is larger than I would like it to be because of the home app, because like there's too many rooms that I need to have separately in the home app. It's like my home has outgrown the home app, and that's not good. Like, the home app scale from like a 1-bedroom apartment to like a 10-bedroom mansion or something, you know. It doesn't. Yeah.
A thing that really annoys me is that like hubs show as the same bubbly tile in the room that you assigned them.
Yeah.
And you can't hide them. You can't do anything with them. They just sit around like a bad smell and they just get in the way. Like, they should be like a tiny little button at the bottom of the room that says hubs. And like anything that if you tap on it and it does nothing, because obviously if you tap on a light bubble, if you type on a light rectangle, it turns it on and off, right? If you type on a HomePod, it plays and pauses. If you tap on a button, like the Logi button, it does nothing. Like the buttons, the hubs, They should be like hidden away in like a sub menu because you can't do anything with them most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And it's just like they've made it a light and changed the icon, so it's a bit stupid there.
Yep.
So that's my home app summary of complaints.
Kind of
the widget situation. I think widgets on iPhone have been kind of abandoned. Like we said before, all the Apple widgets are kind of weird. Like they show like contacts versus like the actual content. The thing I'm specifically calling out here is a regression in iOS 11 where they made widgets on iPad into a single column that you scroll through.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a 12.9-inch iPad, and it's the biggest waste of space in my life. Before iOS 11, which was supposedly the iPad focus update, the widgets should be split into two columns, left and right, and you could choose which goes on the left, you could choose which goes on the right, and they wouldn't be ridiculously wide, and it wasn't the most sophisticated thing in the world, but you could see everything in one go. On my 12.9-inch iPad, I have to scroll to see all my widgets. And it's like, hello? This is like using the Twitter app on the iPad. It's terrible.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's an Apple system panel.
Hmm.
So columns, not bring them back.
Yeah.
Lock screen aliveness is like kind of like a conceptual thing. Kind of what you're talking about before, but I make a parallel to like Apple Watch complications, right? Where you can have a weather complication, you can have a dark sky complication, you can have a workout complication that give you these like snippets of information on the watch and they update and you can tap through and launch into stuff. The iPhone doesn't have any concept of that, really. If you plug it into charge, it will give you like a charging alert. If you're running a system timer from the clock app, it will put the timer on the lock screen. But that's about it. Mm-hmm. I wish you could put like complications, essentially, and they'd be slightly different format, but slightly different design. But you could put like a weather complication and have a little icon when the weather updates. You could put your calendar on there. It'd be like a really slimmed down version of like the widget screen, but without having to, you know, scroll over and have that big UI load. Just like tiny little like text snippets with tiny like monochrome icons.
I think both of our ideas are good examples of Apple doing something on one platform and learning, you know, how that can fit on another one. Like it isn't adding a digital crown to the iPhone hardware, which would be, I think, silly. It is taking a concept that works on the Apple Watch and adjusting it for the iPhone and like making the iPhone better because of it, you know, and you need to call them complications because like a callback to watches, but just call them widgets or like, you know, whatever, favorite tile or something. But the idea is kind of the same and let developers make those just like they do on Apple Watch and it'd be useful. Yeah.
This is something I complained about since the iPhone 10 came out. I used to use rest finger to open with my Touch ID iPhones. I really want like look at screen to open on the iPhone 10 for the lock screen. I really don't like swiping up. I think it'd be a lot cooler if I could just look at it and it would just go straight to the home screen itself. And it'd be a toggleable option. It would default to off if you wanted to turn it on. And I've thought about this quite a lot and I think it would be great if the setting was go straight to the home screen if I have no notifications on there. So you know like how it shows you like your recent notifications on the lock screen and then you can scroll up to see more. Well, ignore the scrolling up stuff. If there were just like the most recent ones on there, then fine. Show me the lock screen. I can choose whether to deal with the notifications or swipe up to go to the home screen. If I've got no notifications, just an option that takes me straight to the home screen in one go.
I feel like that option, the reason rest to unlock was cool and that we want to be able to swipe past the lock screen now and just like go straight use our face to go straight to the home screen is because we're not getting a lot of utility out of the lock screen. And if they can add utility to that, then I feel less strongly about like skipping it. It's just that right now, like it can be a better experience to go to the home screen or whatever app you're in and then like check notification center than it is to like see the blank one or like see some alerts and, you know, go from there. So I think it's, you know, zoom out and it's like, if you make the lock screen better, then we want less to skip it. But right now the lock screen isn't worthy of like that half step that you have to have.
It's basically just like a cover photo and that's about it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so lock screen improvements would be nice. Again, I feel like they're the kind of like fundamental changes that we're not going to get at the current time.
Yeah, me too.
I will round out with one last... This is kind of like my stretch goal is the topic of UI consistency. So I kind of covered this in a mail blog post I did where I focused on like how Apple has like 5 different share icons. But the point of the article was not, oh, Apple needs to have a share icon that's the same in every single app, which I think they should do, or at least a much more aligned system. It was kind of like an example of the overall mess that is we've gone from SKU to iOS 7, and then since iOS 7, Apple's kind of been like moving in 5 different directions, adding bold fonts here, adding rounded rectangles here, keeping text links here, changing the home app so it's got big bold fonts and stuff like that. But if you go into Mail, all you get is the navigation bar at the top and nothing else changes. Like, so many of their stock apps feel like they're from like so many different eras, and there's no like real consistency across everything. Like, you have some new apps that are introduced that use the old like iOS 7 style and don't have really any bold text at all, or like the icons are still like really one pixel lines and there's no roundiness to them. Like, it's such a big mishmash of like randomness, and I really want them to like focus on one thing and actually like roll it out to every application. Like, the idea of like the little bubbles that you see in Control Center, which you can force press on and get into more info, and that's kind of replicated in the home app, they feel like weird outsiders, even though they're like new, because not every, you know, most apps don't use that kind of metaphor. Like, you can imagine having a contacts app where all of your contacts are those little bubbles and you can like press them and see more information, but you know, it's still a list. Like, I don't really care which one they go with. I just kind of feel like they need to kind of refine and pick something and implement it everywhere. Especially with like buttons, where you see some buttons that have now, you know, platters and rounded corners and stuff, and then you go on this different app and there's no button, rounded corner, and it's like, you know, there's no semblance of order here. It's just what each individual team seems to roll out. Like, combine and reduce and, you know, refine to like an actual design that you can stick with. Yeah. I think the problem that we've seen is that every year they've kind of like been indecisive about what they exactly want it to be, and then that kind of year they like change up a few more apps in a different way, but then nothing ever comes back together to be one like continuum of experiences across the system apps.
Yeah.
And UI.
One thing I was thinking about today, and just like in the last few days with you know, kind of making my own list, is that what I, like, if I had control of iOS and could say, like, make these decisions, you know, put this into effect, it would rarely ever be like, I wish that Apple had an app that, collected news from different, like, trusted sources and, like, you know, make Apple news. Like, it wouldn't be that. It would be working with what exists today, not creating something brand new and improving it. And, like, maybe we're going to get that with iOS 12. Like, that would be grand, I think, and not have something brand new that you may or may not care about, while things that exist like kind of stay neglected because reasons, I don't know. But maybe iOS 12 is the, you know, based on the rumors, you know, I just don't have a great sense of what, you know, polish and improvements and stability improvements, like how that translates to what we actually get in a few weeks. Maybe this is the year, but I just feel like it's not realistic to expect that any release ever, is going to be what I would envision, you know, if I had control and say, like, you know, we've introduced 10 years of features. Let's polish all of those and, you know, like, improve, like I said at the beginning, you know, make this thing that we did a 1.0 of, you know, like if you're version numbering your apps, you know, like, let's do like reminders 2.0. And the closest we've got to that is kind of like notes, I think, of like ground up, redo the app and make it just way better than like in like a widget kind of app. But I don't feel like we're going to get that. Maybe we will, but I'm not confident though.
But what will probably happen is you'll get it for like one app.
Yeah.
And then nothing else. Like, that's been the trend, right? Like, there's rumors of the Stocks app getting redone. It'd be like, great, the Stocks app's really nice now, but what about everything else? Like, that's the problem. It's not that, like, when they actually do a new app and, like, make it good, I think they generally do a pretty good job, but then there's just so many, like, stalwarts and laggards on around the place.
Yeah. And by the way, like, we could take everything we talked about today and, like, just do one episode on iPad, and there'd be so much to discuss, like, not even about fixing multitasking, but, like, you know, I'm thinking about the music app and how if Apple was making a music app for iPad, it wouldn't look like it does today. Like, they took the iPhone app and they made it, like, scalable to adjust for, like, split view and multitasking, you know, but the music app was worse on the iPad than it is on the iPhone because it's made for the iPhone and it scales up to the iPad. But, like, you know, that's not the way the iPad music app used to look. It used to be like something they were quite proud of, I think. And I don't think it is today. Not like
and rinse and repeat for almost every single app.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. But
and like then we complain about Twitter not using the space, but it's like Apple doesn't really do it great either.
I am kind of okay with Twitter because like I'd rather Twitter have like a kind of a meh full screen app but have it be able to be in split view than have like a really good full screen app that can't multitask. I know it doesn't have to be one or the other, it can be both. You know, look at Tweetbot for example, but they made a decision. And I think it's the best one, but like they're not the platform creator like Apple is. Apple should be the lead by example.
Twitter has limited resources. They're investing in multiple platforms, and their core audience is phones, right? So they optimize to make an iPhone app for first and foremost.
Yeah.
And the split view app is like the iPhone app, but taller. And that's perfectly fine. Apple, as the platform vendor, has more money than anyone on earth.
Sells 10 million iPads a quarter.
And should be the most invested in like having great iPad applications. And I think the iWork suite do a pretty good job of optimizing for the screen. I think GarageBand does a great job of optimizing for the iPad. But, like, Mail is... Messages is just two columns and it's really wide on the iPad. Like, do you remember in iOS 10 where they added, like, email had three columns out of nowhere, right?
For the 12.9-inch
iPad, it was, like, three columns to take advantage on the 12.9-inch screen. Yeah. Great. No other apps took it on.
Yeah,
and it's not even a developer API. Like, if you want to do that, you have to roll it yourself. Like,
yeah, it's Mail and Notes, I think, and Notes is with another column.
Yeah, Notes does it as well. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But and then if you go into music's great. If you go on the search tab in music, it's just the search bar in the middle and then a load of white around it.
I mean, like, my complaint about music is that when you go to the music app on the iPhone and you're in the library tab, you see. Like your like text links to sections, you know, playlists, artists, albums, songs, download music, whatever you have there, and you can tap between those. On the iPad, it's like a drop down thing to change.
Yeah, it's in a popover, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know why. Like what?
It's just laziness. Like
I don't know how you get that.
I mean, it's sad, but it's true. Like Safari on the iPad is well done because they have like the split view where you can have two tabs side by side. So again, like it's not every single app, but it's most of them are pretty mediocre on the iPad. And this was not the case pre-iOS 7. Like pre-iOS 7, the iPad apps were like artisanally made for that screen size. And I'm not just talking about how they looked. Like they would have sidebars, custom UI, you know, controls that were only on the iPad. Now it's like if it's not on the iPhone and it can't be scaled around, then we're just not going to do it.
Right, and it was pre different screen sizes and pre needing to change the shape of your app for different columns. Now, I think it's still possible for Apple to do both things
and get way close. Like, I agree, it's harder, but they could get way closer.
Yeah,
way closer.
Like, I think Tweetbot's a great example of an app that can do it. Like, they take advantage; they let you add more columns, they let you have like these side tools. Another app that's like more complex is Algorithm's DJ app. So that is like. I mean, I think the equivalent of an Apple app is GarageBand, you know, where they've got like, tools laid out. And GarageBand, as far as I know, can't multitask. But DJ can, because they have an iPhone app, they let you get, like, make your shape like an iPhone app, you know, in the column over there. And they have, like, an in-between size.
But just to be clear, GarageBand works on the iPhone.
Exactly, yeah. So
but it doesn't work in multitasking.
Yeah, on iPad. So That's an example like where Apple is not leading by example there. And so can you really expect other apps to do better? And this is where it starts, is like, if they're built into the platform especially, but even if Apple makes them, they should do better. So, I'm just really going into WWDC. I mean, that's what we're doing with these wish lists, is we're leading up to WWDC and see what we actually get. I just don't have a good sense of what we're actually going to get. You know, I feel like it will be things that are kind of surprises as new things, and not so much of like things that exist are better. But I would be happy to be proved wrong, you know, by what happens in a few weeks. So we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm really excited to see how they like position it and frame it, and because everyone knows, right? That everyone knows this performance stability is like hanging over as a cloud, and then are they going to address it straight up and be like, iOS 12 is the fastest and most stable release we've ever done? Or what they're probably going to do, but not for sure, is like, here's 5 new features, let's move on to something else. Like, and then it's just kind of implied that this one's more stable. I'm really interested to see how it's all put together.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't think we really talked about Siri today, did we? Like, at all?
No.
Yeah, I think we can get to Siri more in the HomePod section, but we mentioned a few weeks ago, like, how I think they'll introduce Siri, and I think it'll be part of like iOS, and then like maybe some of those things will work on HomePod, but probably not. So. but my point is, though, I think they can do like, here are 5 new iOS features, and then the rest is about Siri as part of the iOS 12 section, if there are Siri improvements, which I don't even know. but that's how they could get by with that. It's like, you know, you don't need to introduce an Apple News and you know, this and that. It can be mostly about what Siri can do, and then that's your iOS 12 section, you know, for new features. So. But we'll see. It's kind of, from today, 17 days away, so we're just over 2 weeks away. I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait. With that being said, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are?
BZMAO, and not on Instagram.
All right. And if you have any feedback, you can let us know there. You can email us at happyhour@905mac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.